All right, well, I guess might as well get started. Quality of service. Some packets are more equal than others. Why do you care about quality of service? Why do you guys care? Why did you come here besides habit?
I didn't have anything better to do with my evening.
That's good.
I thought I had to unlock the door.
That's right.
I mean, it's an interesting problem. Let's say you've got a house full of people and somebody's hogging all the bandwidth.
Right.
You want to do something about it.
Exactly. That's a very good situation. And you don't want to tick them off. You don't want to block the BitTorrent ports or whatever that would make them really mad. But you do want to give you the more important traffic priority. So what we have here in kind of a simplistic view is real-time versus bulk. We've got big downloads and whatever that even if you're watching a movie streaming, for example, they're going to have buffers, and so it's not so important that those packets get there right at that moment. Whereas things like voice over IP or interactive SSH sessions where you're typing and you want to see the letters that you type right away in Telnet, those are the things that need to happen right away. So I put these three examples because they kind of are historical corresponding. Telnet versus SMTP. Of course, SMTP is the original bulk traffic and Telnet is the original interactive traffic. And then, of course, we graduated to SSH versus HTTP because now people are downloading big stuff on websites, images, that was the big stuff back then. And then you SSH in and you want to be able to do it. So if you look on the internet for documentation on this type of thing, and a lot of the documents are from that era when browsing the web was a high bandwidth thing that was going on, and it was causing problems when, the person on the other computer in the room that was browsing the web, just downloading in images and files and stuff, was causing SSH latencies for the hacker in the corner. So, and then of course nowadays we have VoIP and BitTorrent, and it just the chasm gets bigger and bigger as time goes on. VoIP, of course, is much more real time than either of those two previous, and BitTorrent is much more bandwidth intensive than either of the two previous, and it continues to do that. So quality of service is important, and interestingly enough, it was designed into the internet protocol from the very beginning. If you look at the RFCs in 1981, there is a type of service field in the IP header that tells you whether this should be low delay traffic or high throughput traffic and so on. Unfortunately, there is not very many routers that come out of the box configured to actually pay attention to those fields. So while some traffic sets those fields, they don't actually get used a whole lot. But the good news is, if you take the step on your router to pay attention to those fields, you can get quite a bit of improvement in what you're experiencing. Okay. No, it was not legislated. I'm sure that if the Congress got wind that it would be a good idea, I'm sure this would be their solution. But no, we can do better. We can do it now, and we don't have to force everyone else into it. So there's some pre-wrapped scripts, which of course is what most people and probably you will want to use. Wondershaper has been around from the SSH HTTP era. It is the granddaddy of all these scripts, and it works great. It is a phenomenal improvement over what you did. However, there is room for improvement. It's one-sided. It only works on your upload, and it throttles your download to get rid of the queues. We'll talk about that later. But other than that, it doesn't do any shaping on the download, which, of course, is where all those interesting things happen, big downloads. So Wondershaper actually does a great job, but it's not the end-all. If you use OpenWrt, this QoS-RE script is, they actually have a package, but it's not in the repository, so you have to go fetch it. It does a great job, and it does shape in both directions. And then I wrote one called Corset, which is a play on Wondershaper. And and so I figured, we can do better. And so my basis were these two, and I wrote it because I wanted to give a pedagogical example where we can kind of go through it, and it's not so complicated as QoS-RE, but it does both directions, and so it's kind of a hybrid. And we'll look at that later. Okay, so what do you need to do this? You need Linux, of course. You need IP Route 2, which is a program for, well, it's a collection of programs for dealing with IP stuff. And so ifconfig and the old tools, this is a step up from ifconfig. IP Route 2 has tools for doing the same things you do with ipconfig, netstat, route, everything you can think of, and it gives you a lot more flexibility and power over what you can do in the Linux kernel that you can't do with the old tools, the old Unix tools. And one of those tools for this application, the tool that's most important, is called TC, which stands for traffic control or something like that. I forget now, but we'll look at the man page. And then with the TC command is what we use to set up all of our quality of service queuing disciplines and classes. We'll talk about that later. IP tables will help you to figure out which stuff you want to shape, because you can do a whole bunch of matching and ports and hosts, and you can get modules and match on certain kinds of protocols and so forth. And then we need to understand what are queues. The internet is a series of twos. Well, that is almost actually true.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. And if you don't understand, those tubes can be filled. And if they're filled, when you put your message in, it gets in line. It's going to be delayed by anyone that puts into that tube enormous amounts of material.
Okay, so...
I've never understood why people laughed at that statement. It's a really good analogy.
It is a really good analogy, and I'm here to tell you that he's actually, in some way, kind of right. And what he was saying there about if you put stuff in the tubes and it fills up, then your next packet's going to wait in line. So if you got a couple megabytes of BitTorrent in front of you in a tube, and you put your SSH packet in there, or your VoIP packet in there, it's going to wait for those other things to go along. So that part of his speech is actually kind of funny sounding. Senator Stevens, Alaska, and he gets made fun of a lot for it, and because he didn't really understand it, and his wording is funny, but the actual concept isn't all that far off. So I like this picture because it shows lots of tubes, which is what we're going to do, because you can think of each link between host A and host B as a tube, a fat pipe or a thin pipe or whatever, but you can also think of it, every router has a queue in it. The queue keeps the, I'll draw it up here. So you've got this queue, we'll draw it like a tube. Packets come in, and then packets get sent out. But sometimes packets come in faster than you can send the packets out, because this link is slower than that link. And so we set up a queue. So for example, this is your LAN, and this is your ISP. Okay, things can go out this tube a lot slower than they come into this tube. So eventually the tube is going to fill up. Your queue is going to fill up, and then packets will start dropping, and TCP will back off. And you'll find the rate that keeps the queue pretty much full. Okay, so this is what queues do for us. So we've got some theory here. The good, the bad, and the ugly about queues. The good thing is that the packets don't drop right away. So if you've got a burst of traffic, you send a burst of traffic from the LAN, it gets stored in the queue, and then it gets sent to the ISP as fast as it can. You don't have any dropping, you don't have any reshaping of bandwidth. So that's good. And that's really good, especially for large downloads, because you get rid of all that flutter in the network. Sometimes you can send just a little bit more data, sometimes a little bit less data. And so this, with TCP, with the queues, it gives you a better throughput of your data on a large download or upload. And so for that reason, first let's talk about latency. When you have a queue, this is what Senator Stevens was talking about, you have a line, a big block of stuff, then you've got a latency. A packet comes in here, it doesn't come out there until the other packets in front of it have gone. So there is a latency introduced. If this link is fast enough that the rate of stuff coming in can go out, then the queue never fills and there's no latency cost. But if the queue does fill up, there's latency. And the ugly is that throughput sells. Okay, so your ISP gets judged not on your interactivity or your latency or all these things that kind of matter to the people that are really thinking about it. But you know, Joe Schmo, he judges his ISP based on how fast can I download whatever I'm trying to download. And so since the only downloads that you're going to notice are the big ones, so throughput is what's important. And so throughput sells, and so everything that comes in and goes out, the longer the queue, the higher the more average throughput is better. I mean, it doesn't improve throughput, so there is a limit. But they're going to have long, huge queues, which does a terrible thing for latency. So what we need to do is we need to be the bottleneck to keep from filling up those queues at the ISP. So remember, the ISP has a huge queue over here on his router. So we need to keep our queue emptying stuff into his queue at a slow enough rate that his queue doesn't fill up with our traffic. So we do that by restricting how much the rate with which we send stuff to the ISP. And by restricting that rate, becoming the bottleneck, then we are able to control which traffic gets sent out. So let's take a break from this slide for a minute and watch a little video clip.
He said the gray building, right?
All the buildings are gray. Give me a hand. Oh, very funny. How am I supposed to drive this pod with one arm, stupid human?
So go back and feed that in. And then make sure when you're seeing a facilitating...
Leave this to me. I'm British. I know how to keep.
So now they're in a big long queue. This is your ISP, and they're the packets that want to get through. So traditional, no quality of service, they have to wait for the whole line to get through. But
no person can do anything.
Presidents don't have power. Their job is to draw attention away from you. No offense. I mean, you're a great guy.
Hey! How you doing? Hey, we're your president!
So this is quality of service here.
All right!
Next!
How you doing,
Benny? Thank you. No, really, it's me. No, really, seriously, take this. I love Kabuki. Give us a kiss, darling.
Hey,
Benny.
Hi,
I've come about
releasing
a prisoner.
Prisoner release form!
Okay. So he got to the front of the queue, and so he got, you know, through that whole line without waiting for everyone. So our heroes are the voice over IP packets, and we want to get them to the front of the line. Well, the way we do that is actually by having several queues. So you have your Ethernet 0, and we put stuff in different lines, different queues. And then they come out. Sorry, you can't see that. It says Ethernet 1. So ETH 0 into queues and out ETH 1. So what happens is all the normal traffic goes in this middle queue. This is the normal queue. And all the important traffic goes in this queue, which is usually empty. And so it goes right to the front of the line because he always takes this one first, then from this one, and then from this one, which is stuff you really don't care about. And if that got space, I'll go ahead and let it go through.
The commercial line at the bank.
Right, exactly. So. So this is what we need to do. So in order for this stuff to matter, because imagine at Walmart you've got this kind of setup, and then you feed them to a Walmart teller, and there's only one teller at Walmart. Okay. So if there's a huge line for the teller at Walmart, and you let an important person through from this first queue, so you've got a huge line because you let lots of people out, and then someone important comes, he can only get to the end of that long line. So you got to keep that line short, and just hand them people as the as she becomes available to tell her, so that you keep control over who gets served first, the latency and so on. So let's demonstrate this latency. It's really actually quite dramatic. So you can tell from the ping command here, we've got, if it says time equals so-and-so milliseconds, 40 to 100 milliseconds roughly. Now we're going to make a voice over IP call and hear that it sounds just fine.
They have been carried away by monkeys.
Okay, so the monkeys are happy. So then we come over here and we do, we're going to start a transfer. And we're going to load our, so this is my server at home. We're going to load my server at home by uploading from my home to my to this computer here. So we're going to load that link, my DSL link. I just wrote a script to copy stuff. So now look at how the latency has jumped. Now we're in the hundreds, 600s, 500s area, you know, latency of seconds. So first of all, 500 milliseconds is what, half a second. If you start talking to someone and you're half a second behind, then you can start noticing that. So the latency alone is bad, but then you're going to have jitter and packet loss also, and it's going to wreak havoc with your call, hopefully.
They have been carried away by monkeys.
So usually it breaks up more than that, unfortunately. That's during a presentation, so obviously it's going to work fine. But so right, so but it's going to manifest itself. There're going to be skips. People are going to tell you, "I can't hear what you're saying. You know, is it your connection bad? Are you one of those crazy people that uses the computer for your phone?" And so you're going to get in trouble. And so I stop the transfer and it immediately jumps back down to, so we've emptied the queue right away. Okay, so now how can you tell how much bandwidth you can handle before, you know, how do you throttle it to the right level? Because you don't want to throttle it too much or you lose that potential bandwidth that you could be using. You want to use as much bandwidth as you can, but you want to throttle. So what we'll do is even this load test we had going right here on otherwise unloaded link, you're not using your link for anything else, and you look at this this number here, when it stabilizes, 105 kilobytes per second. You multiply that by 8, and that gives you the kilobits. So my upload link is about 800 or 810 kilobits per second, which is a little bit less than what they say it is, obviously. It usually will be. And so going the other way, how fast I can download at home. So this is actually using SCP to copy a file to my server at home. And we're looking at the 150 times 8, about 1,200. So that's about right. Nominally, it's 1,500, 1.5 megabit, but we know that it's going to be a little bit less. So now it's up to 160. So you watch it for a while, and then you find a nice equilibrium, and then you shave a little bit off, 10 or 20 kilobit, and then that's kind of where you throttle it to. Okay. So any of those scripts will have a place where you enter your upload and your download bandwidth, and then it will throttle those and give you control over the queues. Okay, so we got to be the bottleneck. If you've used Cacti before, it's a really neat tool. You can look at bandwidth measurements, and if you happen to use the full bandwidth every from time to time for a few minutes to an hour at a time, you will get something like these plateaus. Now, these actual plateaus are from me messing around with quality of service scripts, and so that's why this plateau is lower than that one, but because I was throttling it. But the natural plateau is the same thing. You'll see a kind of a plateau at a mesa, and that tells you your over time your average bandwidth ability. So if you saturate the link and measure it, that's what you'll get. Or you can do instantaneous measurements from, there's lots of bandwidth measurements online. They'll upload stuff and download stuff and they'll give you a measurement. If you go that route, be sure and test several different, servers so that you are getting a fairly accurate picture, not just there's some bottleneck between you and that server that's not the true bandwidth. And then you can do it yourself, like we demonstrated. Those scripts that I ran were just just a wget and an scp. And then you can, and when you do it, watch the ping latencies, because you want to see that those ping latencies jump up. And then if you can control the speed with which you're uploading stuff, either by applying one of these quality of service scripts and throttling it, or by, I think wget has an ability to say only use this much bandwidth.
Yes.
So.
I hope they use that at work.
So if you can, if you do that, then kind of try and find that place where the latency stays fairly low. Find that jumping point and just stay just below that jumping point, and you'll be better off. Now your latency should adjust up a little bit, but it won't jump up until you start filling the queues, and so you get faster than your upload. Than your link can handle.
One quick question that's a little bit off topic. That was a ping running on that machine going to your...
My home machine, yeah. Yeah, so let's go look at it. So
I could swear there was a gateway between here and off campus that blocked ICMP packets.
There is. In our department, I'm actually on the math wireless.
Oh.
For that exact reason. So
I never know it was actually at our department.
Yeah, it's our department that it happens. Yeah, in the CS department, the ping doesn't work. But I got around it. And while we're at it, I'll mention this is a window pinging my server. And then this is my open WRT box between us and the server, along with some other stuff. It's my gateway to my internet. And then this is our server, and this is my server here. And now I'm running a server instance of a little program I wrote called BMW, which stands for bandwidth meter. Yes, it's dyslexic. Because BMWs are fast, right? And so I'm running this, and it'll run it, and then it'll give you kind of your standard deviation. So if you run this for a while, this is another option. And I'll provide links to all this stuff online. So that tells me that... plus or minus that many kilobits, that's what I've got. Okay, so, and while that was going on, of course, our latencies jumped up. So, now we talk about how we actually do this queuing. So let's go down a level. So your router, or your Linux box, stuff comes in, it gets stuck in a queue, and then it gets dequeued. It's enqueued and dequeued. So the default is actually called PFIFO, which just means first in, first out. But it does pay attention to the TOS bit. So if you say this is a low delay packet, so basically this is several different lines, three different lines, like we have drawn on that other side. And so everything goes in the default bucket unless it's a high priority packet, and then it goes through quickly. But there are other ones that we can use. We can use the stochastic fair queuing, which what it does is it watches the connections, and it will send stuff from this connection, then stuff from this connection, and so it'll do a round robin so that no connection starves the other connections. So they all get, within that same class, they all get the same treatment, which is the fair part, and the stochastic has to do with the way that it's implemented. Token bucket filter, imagine a bucket with a faucet. Let's see if I can draw a faucet. Okay, so that's a faucet. And it's dripping tokens into this bucket at a set rate, okay, however many kilobits per second. And then when traffic comes along, each one of these packets is only allowed to pass if there is a token in the bucket allowing it to pass. So the bucket fills up, and then a bunch of packets come, and the bucket empties. And then when the bucket is empty, the packet has to wait for the next token to come into the bucket. And this gives you a burst for however big the bucket is, where it'll send things as fast as it can, and then it sends things at the same rate as the tokens are coming into the bucket. So this is one way to control, it's a good way to control the rate of sending packets. So this is the one that you can use to shape the traffic, to throttle it. Yes?
There would be a bucket for each class you wanted to throttle?
Yeah, that's the idea. You would have a different bucket for each class. And you may have a different rate for each class that you want to apply. Now, the hierarchical token bucket is really the cool one that we're going to use. And what it allows us to do is to create like he was saying, you want a different bucket for each class. So what we do is we create a hierarchy, a tree, where we have for each. So this one has a rate, we'll say 1200 kilobit, okay? And then we'll share it, 600, we'll say, well, this one's 600 kilobits, and 300, and 100 kilobits. Yeah, exactly. A hierarchy of leaky buckets. And each one of these is a token bucket filter sort of thing.
And we have 200 left over?
Six. Oh, yeah, we do. Let's make that bigger. Okay, so each one of these is... So this is your root. This is a queue. We call it a queue disk for queuing discipline. So this is an HTTP queue disk. And then each of these is an HTTP class. So we have different classes, and we can continue to break it down if we want, and continue to share the rates and so on. And now, the really neat thing about HTTP is we can say the rate is 600 kilobits, but the ceiling is 1200 kilobits. And so what it does is it'll give everyone the rate they've been assigned. And so if everyone is using their link, they'll get 300, 300, 600. But if this guy's not using anything, then his 300 gets divvied up between these two and a 2-to-1 ratio. So this guy gets two packets for every one packet that this guy gets, and so on. And so this allows you to say, I want to give 10 kilobits to BitTorrent and 1,000 or whatever to everyone else, and BitTorrent will still be able to use the full bandwidth as long as no one else wants it. And so that can be really nice. That sharing is a very, very handy feature. And then actually what we have underneath each class here is another queue disk, usually stochastic fair queuing, because each one of these queues, you could use a token bucket filter, you could use PFIFO, but usually they use SFQ, because at this point everything's already segregated into quality of service rankings, and so you don't need to do any more, and so you just round robin through the connections. Okay, so there's that tree. So what happens when you enqueue a packet? The kernel set looks at the root. Every interface has a root queuing discipline. In this case, it's an HTTP queuing discipline. And it says, give me a packet. And then so this one, he looks at his children, figures out which of his children deserves to be dequeued, and then he asks him for a packet. And then he looks at his children, and so on, until you get to the bottom. And then they say, here's a packet, and then it goes back to the top. And so root pulls a packet from the top through the tree, from the bottom of the tree. Okay, I'm sorry, that's how you dequeue. To enqueue, root says, here's a new packet, where do you want to put it? And so there's a classification step here. So we classify this packet, decide whether to put it here, or here, or here, or wherever. And you can delegate classification to this node, for example, and then this node may have some classification rules that will put it into its children. Or you can go straight from the root to one of the leaves. Either way. And then we talked about sharing and how that works. Okay, so the filters are like, how do I classify this packet? TC, that command that we use to build all this stuff, provides a way to do lots of filters. You can do binary matching on the packet, or you can do matching on type of service. You can do a whole bunch of stuff, but really all you need to know is that you can use IP tables to mark packets, and then you can just, based on the mark that you set, they'll go into whichever one of these buckets. And so because IP tables has more power, and you can do just about anything you can think of with IP tables, you can mark them, and then they will go into the corresponding class. Okay, so let's get on with it, right? So in my script, the course that when I wrote, I decided we need these are the ones that I wanted to deal with. We've got expedited traffic, which is the hard real-time stuff, voice over IP, where if you miss a packet, or if the packet happens too late, then bad things happen. Your voice breaks up, the shuttle crashes, things like that. Interactive. Yeah, I don't think so. So interactive traffic is stuff that we really want to be on time, like SSH, but if not, it's just a small annoyance. It's not a big deal. The packet will come late, everyone will be happy. Okay, so that's SSH, telnet. Best effort is just everything else on the internet. The internet is best effort, of course. And then bulk is stuff that doesn't deserve best effort, but usually gets it anyway. And then the dregs of the internet is peer-to-peer and everything else that we are okay with letting it use bandwidth as long as it doesn't take from anything above it. So those are the classes that we're going to use in this script. So just to demonstrate that it actually does something, I'm going to start the script. So now we've applied all those rules. Nothing changed here. Now, when we run our voice over IP call,
they have been carried away by monkeys.
And then, if we start, if we load the connection, now we'll see the queues fill up a little bit, but we have nowhere near the 500, 600 level latency that we had before. And you notice that the monkeys didn't have any trouble. Of course, they didn't have any trouble with the other time either, but that's the way it goes. So you see that the latency filled up a little bit because we're filling our queues, and our queues have a latency penalty. But we're not filling up the internet queues at our ISP, which are much longer. You saw there were 500 milliseconds worth of queues. Okay, so my script apparently is doing something interesting. So let's look at, first let's look at the queuing disciplines we made. Let's revise this graph to reflect reality. Okay, so ignore ETH 0 and ETH 1. VLAN 1 is my ISP facing thing. So we've got, this one is the root, that's 1:0. And then the parents, and then it is a parent to, actually we need to look at the, actually even better than that, let's look at the script itself. It's much easier to read. Okay, so what we have here are the root, 1:0, and then its children are 1:10, and 1:20. Now this is major minor number, just like lots of things in Linux are, major minor number. And then everything under this Q disk is going to have the major number 1 and the unique minor number. And then we're going to have a child 1:11 and a child 1:12. So this is your expedited forwarding, and this is your interactive. And then this one has 21, 22, 23. And this is going to be the dregs. This is bulk. And this is best effort. Actually, this is the real picture. In order to facilitate sharing, we have to have a class as the root of our little tree instead of a queuing discipline. I don't know why. So we've assigned for an 80 kilobit reserve for this interactive stuff, because that's about what you need for two voice over IP calls simultaneously. It's 80 kilobits. So I figure one voice over IP call and some SSH, that should cover it. And then this is the rest. So whatever download is, or upload, whichever one it is, So the rest is assigned to this one. Now we still have sharing, so anything that is not being used over here can apply over here. And then we do the same thing, similar, we've got about 2/3 and 1/3 assigned to best effort and bulk. And again, they can share, and so forth. So we've got some bash math going on here. The two parentheses thing, that means we're doing math. So upload reserve over 2 and so forth. And so it's nothing really. And you can't see the whole thing, actually. Let's see what happens if I... Okay, so we're setting the rate, the ceiling, and the priority. I forgot to mention priorities. What we say, when we say this has priority 1 and this has priority 2, we're saying that I don't care what rates we have assigned, if there's traffic in this one, it gets served first. So even if this one goes over its rate, because it's higher priority, it gets served first. And so so we kind of have a complicated interplay here. And if you want to really read through all that, you can do that online. I will put this online. We probably don't have time to go through the whole thing, but let's go to the beginning and just look at how you would use it. So you set the interface here, or you can get it on OpenWRT, you can get it automatically. And then you set your download and upload and the reserve that you want to use for your interactive traffic. Oh, let me fix that. Is that better? Okay. And so this is where you can set some ports. Now I did a straightforward along the lines of pedagogy. I decided I didn't want to deal with whether it's an upload or download, whether it's source port or destination port, and whether which class. I mean, that's something like 32 different variables we'd have to set, and that would be a pain for teaching. So, and I think it'll work pretty well. So you can always hack the script. And so these are the ports. 5060 is SIP, that's voice over IP. 4569 is EAX, IAX, and that's the asterisk native protocol. So those are expedited ports. Interactive, SSH, telnet, DNS. DNS happening fast is a good thing. And then both ports, 21 is FTP, 25 is SMTP. And I don't have any dregs ports in here, although I could put them in if I knew how I had configured my client for a BitTorrent, for example. Usually they use random ports or ports that you configure, so I didn't put any defaults. And then if you don't want to hack the script, set up a configuration file. So here we just reset the state of everything. We flush out the IP tables rules that we make, and we flush out the QDISC so that we get the default QDISC again. That's always a useful thing. And then here's some comments. Comments are good, right? So here's what we do. We actually have to do it for egress and ingress, which means output and input. And they're slightly different, because if you remember, what we want to avoid is the ISP's queues filling up. So we can only really control what we send, the outgoing rate of any queue. So the downloads that are coming to us, we are getting the packets, and then we're controlling the outgoing rate to our boxes on the other side of the router, maybe. Which is fine, but if this is on your only box, for example, then you have no way of configuring that. And so it's much better to use what's called IMQ, intermediate queuing is what it stands for. And so it adds a virtual interface between your input interface and your output interface, basically your forwarding and post routing and so on. And so this IMQ interface allows you to set up shaping, which allows you to restrict traffic as if you were the ISP router, sort of. Obviously you're not, but you have to, if you throttle it low enough, then they won't queue up at the ISP. However, because you have less control over what's coming at you, which is the whole point. There is a denial of service attack because you don't have control over what people are sending you. The only control you have over it is when you drop packets. And if they're using TCP, when you drop packets, they will come to adjust to the rate that you want if you're dropping the packets right. If they're using UDP, maybe not so much. So because you have less control over that, with the upload, the only real difference is in this line right here. With the upload, I set the ceiling for the dreads to be the regular ceiling. But with the download, and that's what that comment says, I set the ceiling to be DLBE, which is download minus download reserve, so that I keep that 80 kilobits for my voice over IP traffic reserved from all downloads that are in the non-priority side of things. And so if I've got a BitTorrent download going, it will use not the full 1300, but it'll use 1220 or whatever. And then the other 80 will be available instantaneously for any of this priority traffic that comes in.
So it's like you made an exception to the rule that you said earlier that it can use the bandwidth if it's not being
right.
Required otherwise.
Right. In this case, because if I didn't do that, then it would still adjust, but it wouldn't adjust instantaneously because you have to wait for the whole TCP slowdown scheme to happen, which is about a half a second or maybe a second. And in that first 1 second or so, you're going to hear the person that's calling you is going to start breaking up for a second. It'll stabilize, but for that little bit. So if you want that first bit of your call to be all right, or that first bit of typing on SSH, that's where you want to leave yourself a little reserve. Okay, so... And then this is where we start setting up the filters. This is the TC commands to set up the class, the filters that will match on the firewall, we'll see later. And then these filters are for TOS bits. And the type of service bit is actually kind of a funny history. In the original RFCs, the type of service bit had this bit was reserved for something later, and then the rest of these 7 bits were split into precedence, IC precedence, and then this type of service stuff. And then later they got 2 bits were reserved, and this later became the ECN explicit congestion notification bits. And so these, I think there were 4 bits here and 3 bits here and 3 here. And then later, they decided that plain and simple wasn't good enough, so they came up with this thing called DSCP. And so this is still ECN over here. And this DSCP, differentiated service code point, which, if that sounds ridiculous, it is. And so this... In a sort of kind of almost backwards compatible way with the old precedence and type of service fields, tries to come up with code points. Think Unicode. And so now we've got 6 bits, so 2 of the 6 different code points. We're only using like 32 that are actually defined, and the rest are up to the ISP to do whatever they want with. And so makes things complicated.
Did you say this field is in the TCP packet or the IP packet?
IP packet, the IP header, yeah. And then, in fact, we can take a look at that field.
Hey, Hans.
Yes, sir.
I have to take off, but a great presentation
yeah,
so far.
You're welcome.
I'm starting to figure all of it.
Well, that's too bad.
I'm not going to find out. And I don't know, hopefully I'll pick the rest up.
Sure, I'll send a link to the list of the rest. And, okay. So let's look at that IP header. So we're going to capture some packets, generate some traffic.
They have been carried away by monkeys.
Okay, so we got some monkeys. Okay, so if let's look at some of these packets in the IP protocol header.
Yeah, we're cutting off on the edge again, just so you know.
Hold on.
We now know why you're, why this projector can go widescreen.
Yeah. Okay, well, this isn't in widescreen mode, though, so.
Oh, okay.
It's just a matter of falling off the edge. So we've got the differentiated services field. Now, this was normal, which means there is no, the default best effort. Let's see, if we look at, I was hoping some RTP traffic. That's weird. Here we go. Okay, so this one has the expedited forwarding bit set. So it's this byte here, B8. Now you see it says E2E. So this is 2E, the whole thing is B8. And that means this bit field here. So these three bits, these two bits are unused, and then these three bits are saying low delay, high throughput, maximum reliability. This is, we want it all. We want all three bits set. Usually only one or two of these bits will be set, but expedited forwarding means, you know, this is a really important packet, so give it to me. And we've set the precedence to be 5 or whatever that is, 101. Which is fairly high precedence. Not as high as 7, but it's fairly high precedence. No, I'm sorry, 10. I don't know. I was wrong. This is 101, so that's precedence 5, and 110, which is low delay and high throughput, but not maximum reliability. Because what we're saying is, this packet gets there on time or it's useless, so we don't care if you're reliable with it. Just get it there as quick as you can. So that's your expedited forwarding. There are different things that you can set. So what my script does is if it sees the low delay bit set, it will go put it in the fastest queue. If it sees the high throughput bit set and nothing else will set, it'll stick it in bulk because that's what usually happens. SCP and so on will set that throughput bit. And then if it sees a high precedence like this one, 5, 4, anything bigger than 4, which means that first bit was set, it will stick that in priority, in interactive traffic. So there are many different ways you could interpret it. This is the one that I chose. Okay, so that's the actual bit there. Let's see. Oh, we were looking at the script, that's right. So we've set the TOS stuff here, and then we have a little function to help us mark things on port. So we saw IP tables in the protocol, and we match on the ports, whatever, and then we set a mark, and so that's the second parameter. So I'm sorry if the bash functions scare you. But what it really is telling us is that we get down here and we say bulk traffic, we do whatever our bulk parts are, we mark it with the mark 2-2, which tells it to go into, if you remember my tree up here, we had the 2-2 box, which was the bulk box. And then likewise for everything else. In this case, the interactive traffic, we stick ICMP traffic in there so we can use ping to impress our friends. And we use the TCP, the small stuff. What this TCP flags bit means, if it's SYN RST or ACK set, it looks at those three fields and only pays attention to ACK, if you're not familiar with IP tables. What's that saying is this is like a mask. So this is looking at these three fields only match on ACK. And so if SYN was set and ACK, it wouldn't match. So anyway, what that's saying is we take the small ACK packets and we put those in priority. So what that does is that your downloads or uploads, because they can only go as fast as the acknowledgments get back to them. So you don't want to slow down a download or upload just because those little acknowledgement packets have been waiting in line. So you put the acknowledgement packets back at the front of the line so that download can happen at the highest rate that it can happen. So you're not slowing down downloads or uploads just because you're uploading a file or downloading a file on the asymmetric part of it. And then we have expedited stuff. This L7 There's a L7 filter, sourceforge.net, is a IP tables module that will allow you to match on protocols using connection tracking and radio expressions. And so we're saying match NTP, not by port, which we could do because if NTP is running on a standard port, but actually by the traffic itself, mark that with an 11. And then these, we'll look at just a second what the counting means. And that's it. So that chain that we made, every packet coming in or out goes through that chain and gets marked according to what it is. And then the filters will use that mark to put it in the appropriate class. Okay, so and then we set up IMQ and all the other stuff. So that's the script in a nutshell. Obviously, it would take some effort to understand it completely. The great thing is hopefully you don't have to. Hopefully you just plug it in and fill in those two numbers, download and upload, and it'll just do wonders for whatever it is you want to do. But I figured you'd like to at least be exposed to what's going on under the covers. Okay, let's see. So that's it. Those are the links to stuff that I've talked about. I'm going to put this presentation and the script and everything else at that link, hans.fugel.net/QoS. And then the Linux Events Routing and Traffic Control how-to is a phenomenal piece of work, whether you're doing quality of service or other Linux networking stuff. Very good document. And then this is the site for HTB, and that is the site for L7 filter. And they give you all the gory details that you need if you want to roll your own. So, any questions? Yes?
I read in a book somewhere that Windows packets have in the past had all the bit sets of it. They told everybody that they were high priority. Is that
entirely possible? Yes. I'm not sure about that, but it wouldn't surprise me.
And you can reasonably expect any kernel service attack.
Yeah.
Packet to be marked.
So that's very likely also. Yeah, there are things that you can do if you have, of course, you could match on host. Since you're not going to get a whole lot of traffic from Windows coming in with those bits set, because those bits aren't very safe once they get into the wild internet. In fact, I was going to do this demonstration from a virtual machine on my computer, but VMware was stripping the quality of the TOS field and just setting it to zero. And so that would have been useless. So the internet does that same sort of thing. It'll often set or unset those bits according to its own needs, which is fine. That's the way it was designed. And in fact, the DSCP bit stuff, its design is explicitly for, you know, internet service providers and, you know, big links and stuff in the middle to classify traffic based on how people are paying for traffic and so on. And so regardless of how it was originally set, it still is a good idea to configure your voice over IP client to set, you know, that expedited forwarding field and so on. But you can't count on it going through the internet complete whole that way. But if you set it in your LAN and you pay attention to it, or you pay attention to the ones that are coming in, then it will usually do the right thing. If you find that it's being a problem, you just modify the script to either ignore those bits or only pay attention to them when they're set in isolation, so the low delay bit and nothing else being set is more likely to be valid than all of them set, which is maybe what Windows would have done, or denial of service attack.
Yeah. That's one that I'm completely misunderstanding the whole concept, but if one person is capable of saturating the upstream queue such that you get a half a second latency, what good is you personally doing traffic shaping and nourishing when your neighbors or apartment?
Right, right.
The apartment can
Well, that's a good question. The most important answer to that is that usually that big queue that you're filling up individually is not the one at the ISP, actually. It's the one on your DSL modem, so which usually you can't control directly. Sometimes you can, but even if you can, you can only really control its size, which controls that latency.
So you don't have some kind of prisoner's dilemma thing going on with your neighbor?
Yeah, no, not exactly. Now, if you do have, I mean, obviously, if your neighbors are using all the bandwidth, then your packets are going to wait behind them. But at least your important packets got to the front of your line before going into their line. Yeah. So that's the best you can hope to do.
Queue in the modem?
Yes, your DSL router. I don't know if the modem itself, the modem part of the router itself, but usually these are routers themselves, unto themselves.
Okay. I'm sure the modem itself has
yeah,
queues.
Yeah, I'm sure the modem doesn't, but the router that's wrapped around the modem does. And it's usually pre-configured to be fairly large because throughput cells.
So you get control to route your traffic higher than anyone else in the family, for instance.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's...
Yeah, it's an exercise in control what you can, and the rest is... out of your control.
And it's obvious that it has an effect. So.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Well, you know, the bandwidths I get both upstream and downstream seem constant enough that it doesn't seem like I've got neighbors periodically saturated.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's generally true.
It's because you're not my neighborhood. Well, that's possible too. But, you know, my limitation seems to be right there at the very skinny pipe.
Yeah.
My house.
Yeah, and remember that your ISP has, you know, maybe a huge pipe, and each one of the people feeding into it has this limited DSL bandwidth, and so you probably, unless everybody went to download some ghastly video or something, then you're not going to fill up all the queues, and so the queues that fill up are actually the ones on the customer side of the link. Also, if you've ever lived in a high bandwidth place where all of a sudden the limit is not your bandwidth but the bandwidth of the server serving you, then that presents some entirely different challenges. So, but usually when you live there, you don't have to worry about this sort of thing, because you rarely saturate your link because nobody else can keep up with you unless you're downloading from 10 sites at once, or BitTorrent perhaps, because you're downloading from 10 sites at once. But the interesting thing is, like in the LARC scene stuff, they don't really consider, because they didn't exist at the time, these peer-to-peer situations where you've got 10 people throwing data at you as fast as they can. Okay, so if you start dropping packets, then they all notice at the same time, and there's a synchronous TCP problem going on where they all back off at the same rate, and then they all send another packet at the same time, and so it's, I don't remember what they call it exactly. So this can happen, and it's a problem. So we use, in my script, I'm actually not doing it, but in the version that I used today, but there's random early detection, if you're familiar with TCP, and you're able to randomly drop packets so that they don't all get in synchronization with their backing off algorithms. But even so, I think that's another reason why I set up that little reserve for download, because in the BitTorrent case, usually you've only got maybe one person uploading from BitTorrent, but downloading you're getting from several different streams at once. And so all those streams coming at you, I wanted that reserve so that no matter the fact that I got 10 people throwing stuff at me, I'm still going to have that 80 kilobits to use for priority traffic. And it is a little bit of a trade-off. Of course, 80 kilobits slower is noticeable in the time that it takes to download something, but I think it's a good trade-off if you use VoIP, for example, frequently, and BitTorrent frequently.
Yeah, that actually surprised me a bit. Without having thought about it carefully, I had assumed that shaping download would do any good, because
yeah.
You know, you've got a skinny pipe going into you and much higher bandwidth inside the house.
Yeah.
But that even shaping what you accept would, because of the back off and packets are getting dropped,
yeah.
Back upstream.
Yeah. And the answer, of course, is that people regulate how much traffic they send you by the whole which packets get dropped and the acts they do not receive over a window, and so because of that, they actually will end up sending you at the rate that you have between you and your DSL link.
And That's another surprise, if I remember right. Because IQ is minted in a very different time now, they got lucky on this. It wasn't actually planned that way. Trying to be greedy with your bandwidth ends up costing you.
Yeah.
That backing off when you don't get packs works better than just throwing packets and hoping they get there.
Yeah, definitely. It's very interesting how things interplay, and they never do what you expect. You know, you figure, oh, I'll just do this, and everything will work great, and then you test it, and it doesn't work great. Like, what the heck? So, and that's one example of that. So the upshot of the whole presentation is get one of those scripts, slap it on, and live happily ever after. And then I could have told you that in 5 minutes. You could have left and gone to eat dinner, right? But I had to torture you.
Now that'll work with PF, right?
Well, you'll have to have different scripts, of course, but yeah. I'm sure that there's a way to do it with PF.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's the lesson we've taken away from previously, is anything that can be done with PSP somehow.
Even if you got to get out the spit and bail bar, it can happen.
And there really are a whole lot of scripts out there. Those are the WonderShaper, like I said, is the granddaddy. And as far as OpenWRT goes, QSRE is great. But for Linux, you know, for actual Linux boxes running as routers, there are dozens and dozens of quality of service scripts out there that people have written. And I just added another one to the list. But a lot of people roll their own.
With a great name.
Yeah, that's primarily why I wrote it, is because I came up with this great name and I had to just embody it.
That would be really sad.
So,
it's cool, but it would be really sad.
Yeah, no, it's not entirely true. I wanted to do it to understand, because it is kind of complicated. To be able to tell you guys and answer your questions, I wanted to understand what was going on. All right. That. Anyone want to see any more demonstrations? Should we try to get a bad voice over IP call again?
I think I'm good.
Okay, well you can leave while the monkeys are screaming at you.
I'll have a good night.
Okay, so I've turned off the quality of service here.
They have been carried away by monkeys.
Still not cutting out. I think it might be partially because they've got a...
What's the bitrate on voice over IP?
That depends on the encoding that you use. Of course, the way that the audio is encoded. But the most high bandwidth one is just regular PCM audio, just like you have telephone audio. And that uses...
I'm curious, like inner radio, 192 really high.
Yeah, no, it's lower than that because you're only dealing with voice usually, and it's around 60. No, I take that back, because the 80 was supposedly good enough for two calls at a time, so I think it's 40 kilobit. There are calculators online that you can use to get the exact, you know, including overhead and so on, how much it is. I think it's actually 24 kilobit plus overhead, which ends up being close to 40. So. Not necessarily, but you could certainly set, you know, add an IP tables rule based on the port that it uses or the host that it comes from and give it priority or not. Whether you want the radio to come.
Does Vonage have any kind of special deal, or they don't usually get any cutouts?
Yeah, I would guess that Vonage would probably set those type of service bits, so your low delay. And that hopefully that would make some difference. If your link is not,
okay, thank you.
Yeah, if your link is not fully saturated, then it's not going to matter. It's because you're still going to have room for it to work. So the only time that you really need this stuff is when you are during a burst of traffic, when you're downloading an ISO, for example, or if you're downloading a movie or a television show or something big. When you're downloading something big and you saturate your link for more than a second or two, that's when you're going to notice problems with voice over IP or SSH. You know, whether or not we get the monkeys to cooperate, we should be able to see some delay here. I'm typing characters fairly continuously, and you can see that there's an SSH delay. Now, if we turn on our voice, our script, and then once it takes effect, then it's still not perfect, but it's quite a bit more continuous. And so, just that alone is worth installing the script, because then you don't have that problem of typing something and waiting for 5 minutes. When I was doing the test with the virtual machine, with just the local machine, I was having an effect, and I limited the virtual machine to only be able to receive and send 10 kilobits or something ridiculous like that, and instantly my SSH went, when I started transferring traffic, it just went to pot, and it took me like 5 minutes to get control of the machine again. But once I started the quality of service script, then I had interactive SSH, with, even though I was saturating that whole 10 kilobits with an SCP. So.
Simulated dial-up.
So, yeah, simulated dial-up.
I was real happy when I got my first 9600 baud.
yeah, exactly. So.
Cool. Did you believe that system was a dedicated router, or do you?
So this is actually a little wireless router, wireless access point thing. It's that I put Linux on, or you know, OpenWRT, I put Linux on it. So like your Linksys WRT54GL is the one you want to buy now if you want to put Linux on it. That's an example. This is actually a Buffalo brand, but it's compatible. So yeah, it is a dedicated router, and it does this. If in your home situation, if you don't have a router like that you can put Linux on, you can still use a Linux box as a router between your LAN and everyone else, and you can still put a script like this on it. Or you could just apply it to the Linux box alone. If that box handles most of the traffic, then it would still make a difference.
the router must have broken.
But better get another one.
Yeah.